Blog Talk Radio.
All right, fans, here we go. 4 2-minute rounds of boxing scheduled. Women's in the ring.
The 2 minute round. My name is Felipe León, and unfortunately, I am all my lonesome tonight on the 2 minute round. My usual co-host, David Avila, it's his birthday today, so he had a prior engagement. Obviously, he's celebrating with his family. And Elena Baby Doll Reed, our other co-host, the heart and soul of this show, is a little busy tonight. So you got me all for your lonesome Felipe León from Leave It in the Ring Radio and Boxeo Tijuana. But this is the 2 minute round, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world, where every 2 weeks, every other Thursday at 7 p.m. here on the Leave It in the Ring Network, we talk all things female boxing. Also tonight, we're trying to secure an exclusive interview with former WBC heavyweight champion Marta Salazar, who this week announced her retirement. So I'm waiting for a little bit of a confirmation from her team to see if she's going to be able to call in later on the show. But before that, let's do what we always do on the 2 minute round, this episode number 23. And if you want to keep me company, please do so by calling 347-215-7598. We had a historic female boxing event this past Friday, the 10th. Which we'll get into in a little bit. So if you want to call and talk about that, talk about Clarissa Shields headlining fight on Showtime's Showbox, it would be greatly appreciated. You want to give us a call here and keep me company on the 2 minute round, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world here on the Leave It in the Ring Network, you can do so at 347-215-7598. But before we hopefully get a call from former WBC heavyweight champion Marta Salazar, we're going to go through a little bit of the rundown here of all the past female fights, all the notable past female fights for the last 2 weeks, starting off with Friday, March the 3rd, from Victoria, Australia. We got the return of Susie Ramadan, who scored a TKO knockout in the third round, a technical knockout of Rungnapawa Kawaskrachan, in the third round of Schedule 6 at Bantamweight. Kakrakranchang was down once in the second and twice in the third to give Susie Ramadan the win. So Susie Ramadan back in the mix at Bantamweight. Hopefully she stays at Bantamweight because there is some exciting fights, one of them that we're going to announce later on in the show. If you have not heard just yet, there is going to be a world title fight in that division, in the Bantamweight division, in April. But this marks the first fight for Susie Ramadan of the year. Last year she fought twice, both fights in Australia, where she ended up defeating Vrachampron Prachumchai and also Kumchi Kunya, and those two fights came after her losing the bantamweight title, the WBC bantamweight title, to Jasmine Rivas. So that was last Friday, March the 3rd, where Susie Ramadan scored a third-round TKO over Rungnapa Krokanchang out there in Australia. Whereas on Saturday, March the 4th, from Germany, Nina Menke scored a first-round technical knockout as well of late sub Hafnat Tuklik in a Schedule 10 rounder. And with the win, she captures the WBC Youth Super Featherweight title, where from the same night, from Mexico City, Mexico, Jasmine Rivas scored a unanimous decision over Natalie Maldonado in a 10-rounder at Super Bantamweight. Scores there were 193 times. That was the first fight of Jasmine Rivas since losing to Amanda Serrano back in mid-January on Showtime Extreme. The same night on March 4th, from Guadalajara, Mexico, this fight was not broadcast on any TV network, but we saw Japanese champion Naoko Shibata lose her IBF junior flyweight title to Mexican Alondra La Magnifica Garcia via unanimous decision. Scores were there were 98-92, 97-93, and 96-94, all for Alondra Garcia. This was a rematch of a fight that went down in Germany some years ago, which Shibata won. And now Garcia was able to get her revenge and also capture the IBF junior flyweight title. So now we have a new champion in that division. And from the O2 Arena, the same night on March 4th, on the undercard of the Tony Bellew against David Haye mega event at the O2 Arena in London, Katie Taylor scored a fifth-round TKO in a scheduled six-rounder over the game Monica Gentile at 135 pounds. And to tell you the truth, this Katie Taylor is starting to look better and better in every fight. She's very mobile. She shows patience. She shows power. She shows speed. She shows great punch selection. So to me, she is one of the best new prospects that female boxing has, and she is the rookie of the year to beat. And I'm saying that knowing full-heartedly what Clarissa Shields did this weekend, but I think as far as skill and technique and you know, wanting to see her fight, it's Katie Taylor. That's the fight that I look forward to every time there's going to be a fight card out of England. I hope Katie Taylor's on it so we can watch it because I really, really like her style. Also, on March 4th, from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, on the undercard of Keith Thurman's win over Danny Garcia, Heather Hardy scored a unanimous decision over Evina Kiss in an eight-rounder to defend her WBC International Featherweight title. Scores there were 80-72 twice and 79-73. And on Friday, March 10th, like we mentioned it in our last show and we mentioned it on this show, Clarissa Shields scored a fourth-round TKO in a scheduled six-rounder to capture the vacant NABF middleweight title over Silvia Sabatos in only her second fight as a professional. We saw Clarissa Shields win two. She went on and won two Olympic gold medals, first in 2012 in London and 2016 in Rio de Janeiro. She came and went pro on late last year on the undercard of Andre Ward over Sergey Kovalev. There she beat a fellow amateur standout in Franchon Cruz. She looked very good, very aggressive, very quick in that four-rounder. A lot of people have mentioned, even my co-host David Avila, that was the best fight card of the evening. Oh, that fight card out of the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas where David Avila was present. And now the big talk was for Clarissa Shields to headline her own Showtime Showbox event. And it happened this past Friday, March 10th, from the MGM Grand in Detroit, a brand new casino, and near her hometown of Flint, Michigan. So this became pretty historic. We had Showtime Steven Espinosa, the vice president of sports programming, on our show, last show, and he spoke how it came about for Clarissa Shields to be the woman to be the main event of this historic event. Obviously, Amanda Serrano kind of opened the door a bit this year on Showtime with her fight over Jasmine Rivas on Showtime Extreme. But it was Clarissa Shields who they are tooting, they are maybe, grooming her to be the new face of female boxing in this new era where we're starting to see, you know, a lot more interest that we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years or even longer, 10 or 15 years in female boxing. This year so far, I mean, we saw Heather Hardy late last year on the CBS Sports Network with that win over Shelley Vincent. But this year, the platform has become a lot bigger in the United States. Like I mentioned already a couple of times, Amanda Serrano with that Showtime Extreme fight over Jasmine Rivas. And then we have this Clarissa Shields fight on the 25th. We're going to have former bronze gold medal winner Marlene Esparza, who is the first and only female boxer to be signed by Golden Boy Promotions, be featured in her pro debut on March 25th, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But we have Clarissa Shields in that fight. So what did we see from Clarissa Shields? We saw Clarissa Shields that was very aggressive. And she was very aggressive in that fight. She didn't want to show Silva Ceballos, who I guess they had some words beforehand, where Ceballos had mentioned to Clarissa Shields that, you know, she was in the big leagues now, that she was fighting a fighter that had at least 15 professional fights. And it's one thing to fight in the pros with bigger gloves, and I mean in the amateurs, I'm sorry, with bigger gloves and headgear, to be in the pros with no headgear and smaller gloves. So Ceballos kind of tried to get into Shields' head, telling her, you know, your first fight and your second fight, or this being only your second pro fight, is not going to be enough. It's not going to be enough to beat a seasoned pro. But Clarissa Shields, she mentioned in a couple of interviews afterwards that she wanted to show Ceballos from the get-go that she was not intimidated by her, that the skill level wasn't there. It didn't matter that it was only her second pro fight, that she was going to prove to Ceballos in the world that she deserved to be at this level, and she did. She came out very aggressively in the first round, and she was able to, you know, really land some good, hard power punches. Obviously, being her second pro fight, you know, there's still some rawness there. There's still some, I don't want to say mistakes or errors, but there's still some polishing that needs to be done in her technique as far as the pros. You know, we all know if we've been watching boxing, whether male or female, that the amateur world is a lot different. You know, there's an adjustment there. There's an adjustment going from the amateurs to the pros. Why? Because the amateurs, it's about points. It's about scoring punches, quick punches. It's not so much about inflicting punishment on your opponent. It's more about scoring points. Whereas in professional boxing, it's about inflicting punishment. Obviously, you're scoring points and you're winning the rounds, but the sooner and the quicker you inflict punishment on your opponent, the easier fight you're going to have. And that's what Clarissa Shields is starting to make that transition. Obviously, she still hits very hard. She still puts together some very hard power punches. But it's about sitting on your punches, not so much trying to score the points, but trying to inflict punishment on your opponent. And she did prove that with Silvia Ceballos, because she was able to stop her in four rounds. And at the end of the fight, or near the end of the fight, it was all Clarissa Shields, and it was pretty much her nearly scoring at will and really hurting Silvia Ceballos. And with that win, she captures the vacant NABF 160-pound title. And now there's talks of perhaps facing Christina Hammer, who is the considered best 160-pounder in the world, the best middleweight in the world, sometime this year. Now, we mentioned it briefly on our last show after our Steven Espinosa interview, that although that sounds great for her and for us fight fans, what happens next? Once she beats Christina Hammer, she gets to do that. What happens next for Clarissa Shields? Who does she fight? Where does she create a buzz? And who can she fight to make something happen and have people be interested? So who's there? Is it Raquel Miller, the West Coast fighter from Oakland? Is it Marisela Cornejo, the girl from Los Angeles, who also is starting to create a buzz for herself? It may be, but I believe those fights should happen before that title fight. One, so her to gain experience, and two, to make her even a bigger name, even though she is the biggest name right now in female boxing. But for her to create even a bigger name, so that way when she fights Christina Hammer, it makes a little bit more sense. So to recap, Clarissa Shields, MGM, Grand Detroit, scoring a fourth round TKO over Silvia Ceballos to capture the vacant NABF title. We have a call. Let me patch it in real quick. 650, you're on the air here in a 2-minute round. Your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world.
Hi, this is Martha Salazar.
Marcel Salazar, how you doing? This is Felipe from the 2 minute round, the female fight world. How you doing today? Thank you for calling in.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be there.
Thank you. Thank you. You're having us here on the show. And for all the people that don't know, you recently, as of yesterday, announced your retirement. What can you tell us about making that decision?
Well, it wasn't really my decision. It was the doctor's decision. Something came up, and he gave me the ultimatum, and so he told me there was no more boxing for me. And so, you know, that's what I got to do.
It's all up to you, but without getting too personal, I mean, is there something to do as far as something that is very related to boxing, why he wouldn't let you box, or is it completely something else?
I think it's something else. I mean, it's a little part of it, but it's something else. I fell and I hit my head, so something came out through that, and that's the reason why no longer can fight.
Oh, okay. Now, Marta, you know, you kind of came to the limelight of boxing late in your career. I mean, you started your career pretty late. You know, if you don't mind me saying, or I'd rather for you to say your age, so that way people can kind of put it in perspective of how late you came into your boxing career.
Yeah, I'm right now I'm 47. I just turned 47. So, you know, I started back pretty late, you know, back in the late 20s, somewhere there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you went pro in 2001, which was when you were 31. But just so that people know and they can kind of know who Marta Salazar are and how important you are to female boxing, can you tell us how you got interested in the sport and how you ended up going pro?
Well, the reason why I started boxing, actually, I started doing kickboxing. I got jumped by three girls, and from there, I decided that I needed to defend myself, you know, and in case that happened again. And so I decided to take kickboxing. After that, I was training kickboxing, tried to get a fight. I made a trainer named Donovan Spooler that he said that he told me that, hey, you should try boxing. There's women's boxing coming up. And, I mean, it's, you know, it's you're not going to make any money or anything, but I think you're ready to go pro. And I was like, well, I don't have any amateur, but if you think that I can do it, you know, I'm down for it. And since then, we got our first pro debut, and from there, you know, just my career keep going and on and on. But it just, I don't have so many fights just because there's not that many heavyweight women at that time. So as I fought, it took me maybe once a year I fought, maybe every 2 years, just depending on the women that was out there at that time. And then I asked.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Yeah, and then after that, I mean, I fought the best that was out there. I fought Vanda Wars. I fought in pay-per-view. I fought Vanda Wars 3 times for the WBC. I lost. And then, you know, so I've been in big cards. And then after that, I fought the best. Nobody else wanted to fight me. And then I kind of retired, really, but not really retired. There was just no other women to fight. And once I talked to Blanca, she was telling me that Blanca Gutierrez, the owner of Babyface, my manager, the one that brought Beautiful Brawlers. And she told me that there was a lot of women coming up, heavyweights. And so I said, well, let's fight the best. And, like, you know, and we fought, what's her name, Sonia Lomanowski. And, you know, she was the number one contender, and I beat her. And from there, I decided to try to go for the WBC again, and finally I got it. And too bad that I have to retire before, you know, I mean, at least I defended it, and I won what I wanted, and it was my goal to get the WBC, which I accomplished. But, you know, I lost it, and then I wanted to, you know, regain it again, but it wasn't able to do it. So this is where I'm at right now.
Uh-huh. Now, just to go piggyback a little bit on what you said, you went pro in 2001 and you fought once, and then you fought 5 times, I believe 4 times in 2002. But two of those fights were against the same opponent, Carly Presente. And then in 2003,
yes,
you fought Vonda Ward. You fought Carly Presente mm-hmm. again. And then you fought Vonda Ward again. And then in 2003 and 2004, you fought Marshall Valley twice. And then Pamela mm-hmm. London. And then Kathy Rivers,
once.
You fought her once. And then Marshall Valley two
yes.
more times. And then you fought Vonda Ward again before going into that semi-retirement. So like you mentioned,
yes.
you know, there wasn't a lot of men, a lot of women fighting, and especially in your weight class. Even now, there isn't a lot of women in your weight class. Now, what was
yes.
about Vonda? What was about Vonda Ward that was so difficult to come across? I mean, you fought her three times, and unfortunately, you came up short all three times. What was about her style that kind of caused you some problems?
I think it wasn't her style. It was just that she was so tall that I never fought anybody that size. And as I kept fighting her, you know, I kept getting better at it. But, you know, I was coming short. She always wanted to fight in her hometown. You know, that plays a little bit part of it also, you know. But, yeah, I mean, she was a tall girl. I mean, she was 6-something. So, you know, it was hard to get on, you know, and I'm not that tall either. So that was kind of hard for me to get her on her. And try to get on her, you know, on the top. I was trying to do the body and all that, but, you know, it didn't work out for me at that time.
Now, in your first fight when you came back in 2013, you fought Sonia Lamaniquez, who at that time was undefeated. And at that time as well, she was one of the bigger names in the heavyweight division, if not the biggest at that
mm-hmm.
time. What can you tell us about that fight and the way that you defeated her via unanimous decision?
Well, I mean, with her, I mean, when I came back, I put 110%. I said, this is what I want, and I want to beat the number one contender right now that is out there. And all I did was we stick to the game plan that we had. We came and I can adjust to the fighter, so whatever style she brings at that time, I'll adjust to it. And I just beat her. I mean, I threw more punches. You know, she couldn't handle those punches. I mean, she it was an awesome fight. I mean, I gotta give her credit for her. I mean, she was awesome. You know, she was one of the best. But I came out with the win. After that, there was I guess she had an issue with everything, and I asked for the I told her I'd give you the rematch, and she never took it. So I mean, I don't know why she didn't take it anymore. I don't know why she doesn't want to fight me again. Everybody wanted to see it again because she was talking so much about the issues that she had with the fight. And so we gave her the opportunity, but she never responded okay, I'll take the fight. We told her we go over there or she can come back over here in California. And she still didn't want to do it. I mean, I trained hard. I mean, I think that her problem was that she was so confident that she was going to beat me because I was older. I was out of the game for a few years. And so I think that's what got her, that she was so confident that she was going to beat me, that she didn't have to do too much, you know?
Okay. Now, a year later, a little bit more than a year later, and to Tanzi Daniel, you defeated her for the vacant WBC World Female Heavyweight title. Tell us how that fight came about and also what it meant to you to finally call yourself a world champion.
You know, I mean, like we said, we're always trying to look for the best out there to fight. I told Blanca, listen, okay, I beat the number one. Now, who can we fight for the WBC? Nobody has a WBC title in the heavyweight division, so let's go for that. I always wanted that, so, you know, nobody wanted to step up. We call her, and I said, listen, this is a world title. If you want it, you can have it. And that's how we came about, you know, that nobody wanted to fight me. So she was the only one that stepped up, and we took it. She took the fight, and, you know, we had to fight.
What do you remember about that fight? What was the toughest part about that fight? And also, you know, what did you feel when you finally had that WBC title around your waist?
You know, at the fight, what I remember was that one time she threw an uppercut, and, I mean, she barely missed me. And every time I say that story, I get chills. And to this day, I get chills when I visualize that uppercut that she threw that she almost got me with. If she would have connected it, she would have probably knocked me out. But thank God that I moved my head a little bit and she just went right through it. But that was the moment that I always remember with her. And winning the WBC, man, that was like the happiest moment in my life in the sport of boxing, because I always wanted the WBC belt, the green belt that everybody talks about, the males, you know, that they have it. This is what they want. It's a big thing. It's a big organization. So I always wanted that, and finally I got it. The feeling was incredible. The night was just amazing. When I got in, they put it on my waist and called myself a world champion. It was wonderful. It was just awesome.
Now, it almost took almost 2 years for you to defend that title, and you also got to live one of your dreams, was to fight in Mexico. You're originally from Ocotlán, Jalisco, but you had never fought in Mexico. You had gone out and fought in Guyana against Pamela London back in 2004. But I know, I remember you mentioned it a bunch of times, even at the women's female convention, the female WBC female convention, that you always wanted to fight in Mexico. And you got to do that last year in March against Alejandra Jimenez. Unfortunately, you lost your title there via majority decision. What can you tell us about actually finally fighting in Mexico, but then at the same time being in a bittersweet moment when you lost the title?
I always wanted to fight over there with my people. I have family over there that they actually got to see me fight. And it was a wonderful experience. I lost the title, but I mean, sometimes that's what happens. And at least, and that defending my title was like icing on the cake. I mean, I already had the title, you know, if I defended it and then, you know, retire after that, because after Alejandra, I mean, there's nobody out there who's there to fight, nobody. So, you know, after I defended it, I would say, well, you know, I'll defend it, because at least I can say I defended the title. But, you know, I lost it. But it was a wonderful experience. I met a wonderful people out there, new people, new family. I can call them new family members. And it was just an awesome date that day, even though I lost the title.
Now, we know that you actually actively look for that rematch. How serious did the talks get for the rematch?
I'm sorry, say that again?
We know that you actually look for that rematch, that ever from the moment that...
Yeah. You got something you want me to take to the yard?
No.
No?
Uh-huh.
From the moment that you lost the title, you were actively looking for the rematch. How serious did the talks get for you to go after Jimenez and the rematch?
Oh, where is it?
Chavez.
Across the street? Okay, cool.
I'm sorry. Say that again. I apologize.
It's okay. We know that from the moment that you lost the title to Jimenez, you and your team actively look for the rematch. So how serious did the talks get to have the rematch at some point?
They wanted, I guess they wanted to wait a year for her to enjoy her title, you know, and that's what they wanted to do. And we waited, and it was fine, and they were going to give us a rematch and everything. And then they called us in December, and they told us that if we can do the fight in April. And we said that we needed a little bit more time just because I was going through all this physical from the athletic commission, that I had to get extra stuff, extra tests done, you know, like an MRI and an MRA. And then after that, then, you know, they saw something on the MRI, and then from there, they just, you know, it went downhill, and we told them to give us a little bit more time to make sure that what the doctor saw was what they say they saw. And from there, well, you know, like now that's how we became that I had to retire.
Oh, okay. Well, on the line with us is your advisor, your friend, a big supporter of you, Blanca Gutierrez, from the, what's the name? Babyface, Beautiful Brawlers out of the Bay Area of California. So let me patch her in.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Blanca. How are you doing?
What's
Thanks
up,
for joining
Blanca?
Us.
Hi. You forgot to say Blanca, Martha's biggest fan.
biggest fan too. Her friend, her advisor, biggest fan. Blanca,
yeah.
To stay on the Marta Salazar subject, what can you tell us? How'd you guys meet, and what did you see when you first saw her fight?
Well, we met in a kickboxing gym. I had an accident wrestling. My leg was broken. I walked into a kickboxing gym. She was there. I started working out, and I just wanted to be a fighter. And she was already wanting to be a fighter, too. And what did I see? We started kickboxing together, along with Corinna Moreno, too. And it was just a great – we were always friends, you know. I mean, we always had that fight in us. It was fun. We've always had fun. That has been the number one between all of us.
Yeah.
We've had fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Marta credits you as the person who brought her back from, like, that semi-retirement. What was going on through your head as far as getting her back in the ring?
Well, I saw a couple fighters out there, you know, and they have a little beef with me because I'm pretty truthful with it. Sonia Lamanakis was out, Carlet Yule, there was Tansy Daniels, and another fighter, and Sonia kept on saying she was best in the world, nobody could beat her. So I said, Martha, there's a couple girls out there, you know, you should come back and make a comeback because you can go for the title again. There's enough fighters out there. Let's go for it. And so we picked up number one right off the bat. I said, beat her. Beat the number one, the one who talks a lot. So she came out for a 6-round fight, and we were all friends. You know, we keep friends in this business because we respect other fighters, you know. And so she came out to fight, and the problem was I think she underestimated Martha. She told me that she has too much experience. And what she didn't realize is back in our day, there was a lot of smokers, and those were better than fights. So Martha had a lot of smokers. We, you know, she had a lot of experience. It's just none of it was on the books.
Mm-hmm.
So
now,
I wanted her to get
go ahead.
Dream.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted
go ahead.
Her to have her dream, the WBC title. I wanted her to go after it because no one had gone after it after Vonda Ward, you know. So and
yes.
She beat Vonda Ward,
mm-hmm.
by the way, in Ohio. She beat her. She beat her so bad, and they handed her the win, you know. So that was another thing on my mind. It wasn't even in Vegas on the 4-round fight. If you look and see what Foreman said about Martha, Foreman was right there ringside, and he was talking about how great Martha's skills were. There was no way that – and then Vonda had to go to the hospital. So, I
no.
mean, that girl, that Tell fight –
okay.
Yeah, she collapsed. She collapsed after the fight. And there wasn't even – and Martha took the fight in 2 days. So we'll take that win. But on the one in Ohio, man, I risked going behind my boss, behind everybody's back to go to that fight.
I won't go.
And she won it. Bye. And but she gave her the loss. So.
Now, Blanca, you were very instrumental in having Marta fight in Mexico to defend the WBC heavyweight title against Alejandra Jimenez. You know, what did it mean for you to have that fight in Mexico, you being, you know, Mexican or Mexican descent, Marta being from Mexico and fighting a Mexican in Cancun? What did it mean to you to be part of that team and part of that dream?
This is the best time of our lives. You know, we decided that it would be great to go to Mexico. And the other thing is the Mexicans were at the press conference were already saying that the other one was the winner. It was hilarious. It was like, no, she's not going to win the fight. And then afterwards, when we were coming in, everybody was like from the USA, but we were saying, no, we're from Mexico. Martha was born in Jalisco. So we were going through all the interviews and telling them. And the people love Martha there. So it was a great experience. I think Alejandra is a good person too. So we had a good experience. It was good for female boxing. It was definitely good for the heavyweight division.
Oh yes. Now, lastly, you know, Marta just recently, a couple of days ago, announced her retirement. So obviously, we all care about her health, and that's the main focus. But you, as a friend and as an advisor, and the person that basically brought her back from that semi retirement, do you feel that there's some unfinished business there for Marta in her career?
Actually, no. The business has been done. I mean, she won the WBO, the WIBA, and then to top it off, I just wanted her to get the belt she really wanted, which was the WBC. And that was really the finished business.
there was no plan for a defense. But when we decided it was so much fun, we said, let's do it. Let's do one more time, you know. But the job was done after she won the WBC. And the reason she fought Tansy Daniel, and I'll put this out there, is none of the other heavyweights would fight her. Not one of them would take the fight for the WBC. Sonya wouldn't take the fight. Carlette Yule wanted too much money. She wouldn't take the fight. Laura Ramsey wouldn't take. None of them would take the fight. None of them. But they'll tell you that Martha's ducking, and Martha would fight in the backyard for a steak dinner. That's how it was. But
to finish off the interview, guys, Martha, the same question to you. Do you feel that you have some unfinished business in the heavyweight division?
I'm sorry, if I have the what?
Do you feel that you have some unfinished business in the heavyweight division?
Oh, yes, of course I do. I mean, this division is hard for everybody, you know, and I mean, if everybody will get together and fight each other for all those people that, all those girls that are out there that they say they want to fight, but then when it comes down to it, they don't fight. It's a little bit sad at the same time, you know. It's like, come on, if you guys want to fight, then fight whoever's out there and fight the best. And even if it's not the best either, you know, I mean, we got to keep this heavyweight division alive. And I don't know how much longer it's going to last, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys, I want to thank you on behalf of everyone on 2 Minute Round for giving us your time. We wish you a great retirement, Martha, and hopefully, you know, you're in great health. And thank you, Blanca, for calling in. And we'll be in touch, obviously, Blanca, to talk about your other projects out there in the Bay Area and your other fighters.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for everything. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you. Have a great night. And there you have it, folks. The former WBC heavyweight champion, Martha Salazar, who this week, at 47 years old, announced her retirement. Obviously, you can hear it in her voice. You can hear from her that she did not want to retire, but unfortunately, she has to because of some medical reasons. I'm very familiar with what she has to go through as far as in the state of California to be able to get a license to box. Here in the state of California, as well as Nevada, and I believe New York, and a couple other commissions, once you get to be a certain age, around 35 years old, the commission orders an extra set of tests to be done on your person so that you could get licensed to box, being that you're an older fighter. They've done it to Bernard Hopkins. They've done it to other fighters. And Martha, despite being an athlete and a world-class athlete, she is 47 years old, as she mentioned it. And so she does have to go through those battery tests. And unfortunately, in her MRI, they found something that didn't look like it would be beneficial to her or for her to continue boxing, obviously getting hit in the head. And she was recommended or suggested to retire, which she is going to follow, doing the smart thing and follow the suggestion of the California State Athletic Commission and retiring. So with that, Martha Salazar retires with a record, with a very respectable record, of 13 wins, 5 losses, and 3 knockouts. And within that respectable career, she did capture and defend the WBC heavyweight title. So moving on to the same day as the Clarissa Shields against Silvia Sabatos fight from Detroit, Michigan, here in Tijuana, we had former WBO Bantamweight champion, flyweight champion, WBO flyweight champion, Kenny Enriquez come back from an 8-month hiatus to score an 8-round unanimous decision over the game Lupita Maravilla Martinez at junior flyweight. Actually, Kenny Enriquez weighed in at junior flyweight, whereas Lupita Martinez weighed in at a whopping 114 pounds. So she had about a 7-pound advantage because Enriquez came in at 107 pounds. But despite of that, Enriquez was able to dominate the fight scoring a unanimous decision with scores of 80-72 two times and 79-73. On the same card, Brenda Flores, a local fighter here from Tijuana, scored also a unanimous decision, but this time in a sixth rounder at flyweight over Jessica Rangel. Scores there were 60-54 and 59-55 two times. Going back to the Enriquez fight, she looked very mobile. She did some things she had not done before. She scored a lot of punches, but obviously with the weight advantage, she was not able to hurt Lupita. And with us now is none other than Kenny Enriquez, who is calling in, and I'm actually going to translate for her because she doesn't speak any English, but we'll do what we did with Mariana, where I would ask her the question, and then I will be translating for her. Hello, Kenya. How are you doing today?
Hola, ¿cómo estás? Estoy muy bien. ¿Tú?
Muy bien, gracias. Entonces, lo que vamos a hacer, te voy a hacer la pregunta y luego la voy a traducir. Dinos, ¿cómo te sentiste este pasado viernes aquí en Tijuana en tu regreso después de 8 meses?
Muy contenta, muy emocionada. La verdad, fue justamente la pelea de regreso que esperaba. Una rival que exigiera más, que no solamente yo llegara a noquear en los primeros rounds, sino que me hiciera trabajar. Y la verdad, creo que me funcionó, ya que hice los 8 rounds trabajando combinaciones que habíamos estado preparando en el gimnasio. Más rapidez, más golpes cada round. Ya lo único que faltó sería noquear, pero pues la verdad la rival aguantó mucho, se le respeta por eso, y pues igual tardó, estaba un poco más pesada que yo, pero igual fue un buen regreso.
I asked Kenya how she felt after an 8-month hiatus in her first fight this year, and after 8 months here in Tijuana, she said she felt great. She felt that she fought a tough fighter who asked a lot of her, and that she was glad that she went the 8 rounds because it was what she needed. She didn't really want a girl, an opponent that would only go a couple of rounds, because she felt she needed the work. She said she felt good in working out some new combinations that they had worked out in the gym. And that the only thing that she needed to do was to knock her out, but it came to be a little bit tough since the girl came up so much heavier than her in the weigh-in. Hola, Kenya. Pues esta fue tu primera pelea de 2017. ¿Qué se puede esperar de ti en este año?
Este año que me corone campeona del mundo, como lo he dicho desde que volví a empezar a entrenar desde noviembre, que este 2017 va a ser el año donde me corono campeona mundial en las 108 libras y donde pienso establecer mi peso. Y pues la verdad quiero unificar, yo ganando el 108 libras, que quiero que sea el del consejo, de ahí voy a empezar por querer unificar la división.
She mentions that this, I asked her, you know, this being her first fight in 2017, what can we expect from her for the rest of the year? She says that this is the year that she becomes a world champion once again, that she wants to become a world champion at her natural weight class of 108 pounds. She's really going for the WBC title. And once that she wins that title, then she's going to try to unify the division. Kenya, ¿por qué tan enfocada en el título del Consejo Mundial de Boxeo?
Porque es el sueño que siempre he tenido y creo que es lo que necesita mi carrera. Necesito el cinto verde por el simple hecho de que ese es mi sueño. Así, no hay más explicación ante eso.
I asked her why is she so focused on the WBC belt, and she said that because that's been her dream, that's the dream, that's the title that she has been wanting to win throughout her career, and there's really no more explanation than that she needs to go after her dream, and her dream is that green and gold belt. Ahora sabemos de que la campeona de la 108 libras del Consejo Mundial de Boxeo es Isabella Roca Zamora, a pesar de que ella ha subido al peso mosca en el torneo de peso mosca. Entonces, ¿estás después dispuesta a enfrentarte a ella? ¿O qué te ha dicho el consejo o tu equipo sobre quién pudiera ser tu rival para esa pelea?
Justamente después de mi pelea, yo fui el sábado a la Ciudad de México, donde Mauricio Sulaimán me dijo que se iba a quedar vacante el título de las 112 libras, y de la Roca Zamora va por el 112 en el torneo que se está realizando. Igual yo se me va a dar la oportunidad por el 108, ya nada más esperemos que esto sea una realidad, porque si recordamos el año pasado ya me habían brindado la misma oportunidad por el mismo título.
she mentioned, I asked her if, you know, the 108 WBC champion is Yvette La Roca Zamora, and if she's willing to fight her or any other fighter. We all know that Yvette La Roca Zamora has gone up to 112 pounds to be participate in the flyweight tournament. She mentioned that right after her fight, the next Saturday or this past Saturday, she actually traveled, Kenny Enriquez traveled to Mexico City and met with Mr. Mauricio Suleiman, the president of the WBC. And Mr. Suleiman mentioned to her that the 108-pound title, the WBC 108-pound title, is going to go vacant now that that Zamora went up to 112, and that Kenny Enriquez being ranked number 3, she's going to be given the opportunity for that title, and that soon they will be naming who her opponent will be. So that's what she's waiting for and looking forward to. Bueno, Kenya, muchas gracias por llamar y por estar aquí con nosotros. ¿Algún mensaje que le quieres dar a los fans aquí del programa? ¿Cómo te pueden encontrar en tus redes sociales?
Muchas gracias a ustedes por la invitación de poder expresarme. Me pueden encontrar en mi Facebook, Kenny Enriquez, y en mi fanpage. Igual en mi Instagram, Kenny Enriquez. Igual lo único que tengo que decir que este año va a haber una nueva campeona mundial y seré yo. Muchas gracias por todo.
She says good, thank you and goodbye, and that you can find her on Facebook under Kenny Enriquez and also on Instagram. And one thing that she wants to add, that there is going to be a new world champion this year, and it's going to be her. Thank you very much, Kenya, and we'll be with you soon.
Hasta luego.
Adios. And now I'm going to be patching in a caller, area code 510. 510, you're live on the air on the 2-minute round. Oh, and it's gone. Well, there you had it. WBO, former WBO flyweight champion and number 3 WBC ranked light flyweight champion, Kenya Enriquez, with us, fresh off her win this past Friday over Lupita Martinez, her first fight of 2017, her first fight in 8 months. And she came on here on the 2-minute round exclusively to tell us that she is going after that WBC light flyweight title, which, although not officially, it may very soon go vacant. Now, to finish off the fight results for this past couple of weeks, on Saturday, match March 11th from Germany, Nikki Adler scored a unanimous decision over Mary Rancier in a 10-round for the vacant WIBF and vacant GPU super middleweight titles. Scores there were 100-90 two times and 99-91. Whereas from the downtown Las Vegas Event Center in Las Vegas on the Roy Jones Jr. Promotions card, but it was not televised, Marina Ramirez coming off her first professional loss, scoring a majority decision over previously undefeated Judith Pereira in a 4-rounder at light flyweight, 108 pounds. Scores there were 39-37 two times for Ramirez and an even 38-38. On Monday, March 13th, from the Korakuen Hall in Tokyo, Japan, Naoko Fujioka, the 41-year-old Japanese fighter considered the best Japanese female fighter of all time, scored a 10th round TKO over Israel Millan, the WBF flyweight champion, to capture the WBA flyweight title. It was vacant. This was the second time that Millan traveled out of her home country of Mexico to look for a title. The first one, she was successful when she went to France and beat, Amira Hamzazoui. But this time, after defending the WBF flyweight title once against Sonia Osorio, she went for the big league, went to Tokyo, Japan, and courageously challenged Naoko Fujioka for the vacant title, but came up short. She went down in the second round and then went down again in the 10th, and they finally stopped the fight. Up to that point, the scores were 88-82, 89-81, and 89-81 for Naoko Fujioka. So with the win, Naoko Fujioka becomes the WBA flyweight champion, along with Kika Chavez, who is the WBC flyweight champion. And then a WBO flyweight champion is, who is the WBO? Give me one second here. Again, if you don't know, this is Living in the Ring Network. This is a two-minute round. Your Hooks and Jabs look at the female fight world. We have this show every other Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific. Usually I have my two co-hosts, who are Mr. David Avila, well-respected journalist from Southern California and a big, big female boxing supporter. He's been following the sport for a long, long time, writing about it, advocating for it. And then also my other co-host is former fighter Elena Baby Doll Reed. But unfortunately, both of them were busy on this Thursday, so you have me, Felipe León, all by myself. But we're trying, we're plugging along, folks. We're plugging along. You want to call in and join me here, you can do so at 347-215-7598. But just to give you a quick rundown of who are the champions in the flyweight division, which I think is one of the most hot divisions, one of the hottest divisions in female boxing. We have Jessica La Kika Chavez, who is part of that WBC Diamond Belt Tournament, is the WBC champion. The silver champion is Ana Arrazola, who Kenny Enriquez, our guest, just a couple of minutes ago, defeated for her title, the WBO flyweight title. But Ana Arrazola actually is very interesting, a veteran southpaw fighter from Mexico City. She actually captured the WBC junior flyweight or light flyweight silver title back in January of 2016 at the female convention. But then when the flyweight tournament was announced, she joined it. She went over to Europe and beat previously undefeated Raja Amashe for the silver flyweight title. It was something of an upset. And now she is the silver flyweight champion, and she is part of the tournament. Last show, we announced the seed, which is going to be Jessica Chavez against Ana Arrazola in April in the second round of that tournament, and Yvette La Roca Zamora against Esmeralda Moreno in the other semifinal fight. But the WBA champion, like I mentioned, is Naoko Fujioka, who just captured the vacant title. The IBF champion is Argentina's Leonela Paola Yudica. And the WBO champion is Japanese Nana Yoshikawa. So there you have it. If anybody wants to unify those titles, they can do so between Naoko Fujioka and Jessica Chavez. Now, very quickly, getting down to the junior flyweight or light flyweight division, Kenny Enriquez had mentioned that her first goal of this year, 2017, is to challenge either Yvette La Roca Zamora, if she's still going to be a champion despite going up to 112 pounds and participating in that tournament, or if it's going to go vacant, beating whoever the WBC orders her to face for the title. The WBA Kenny Enriquez mentioned that she would like to unify the division, so she would have to go through the following people. The following female fighters. The WBA champion is long reigning and very popular Argentinian Jessica La Tuti Bop. She's the WBA champion. The IBF champion just changed hands, or the IBF title just changed hands. It went from Japanese Naoko Shibata to Mexican Alondra Garcia. So she's the IBF champion. And the WBA champion is Australian Louisa Cotton, who just won the title not too long ago. Now, Kenny Enriquez is ranked number 3 in the WBC light flyweight division. We also have Jessica Nelly Plata there. We have USA's Ebony Rivera. We have Mexico's Maria Salinas. We have Mexico's Yesenia Gomez, who is the youth WBC female champion. And then we have the United States' Enias Estrada. And interestingly, we have Kenya's younger sister, who's also a fighter, 10-0. Southpaw junior flyweight Tania Enriquez ranked at number 9. So to finish up, well, we don't have the results just yet for the fights that happened last night from Tokyo. We had an all-female 9 bout card from the same Korakuen Hall in Tokyo, Japan, but we just don't have those results yet, so we're going to announce those on our next show, which is scheduled for March 30th, here on the Leave It in the Ring Network. You're the two-minute round, your Hooks and Jabs look at the female fight world. Now, moving on to a quick news piece on the female fight chatter. Just like it was announced a couple of shows ago here in the two-minute round, it was actually made official. where the two divisional world champion Mariana La Barbie Juarez of Mexico will get an opportunity for a third world title in as many divisions when she challenges WBC bantamweight champion Catherine Fili of Africa on April 1st. The event will be held in Mexico City, in the Zócalo of Mexico City. If you're not familiar with the Zócalo, it's a very big space right in the middle of Mexico City, which we all know is a very big city. And this Zócalo is just a big space. It's like the city square. It's right in front of the capital, per se, of Mexico, where the president works out of. And then it's also in front of the cathedral, which is a very famous and very old cathedral there in Mexico City. So it's going to be a free event. And the organizers, which is Promociones del Pueblo, and the network, which is Televisa, just like Mariana Juarez mentioned, they are going to be back in broadcasting boxing. They're expecting about 50,000 spectators. They're going to be expecting 50,000 spectators. And also on the card will be WBC heavyweight champion Alejandra La Tigre Jimenez, who defeated our earlier guest Marta Salazar to capture that WBC heavyweight title. And she's going to be defending that heavyweight title against Carlette Ewell of the United States. So we're about an hour in here on the two-minute round. We're almost going to be gone since I don't have my co-host here, and it's getting kind of crazy here to keep going without a little bit of feedback, but that's fine. You know, we're professionals here on the two-minute round on the Leader in the Ring Network. So we're going to move on to our upcoming calendar. Saturday, March the 18th, from Santa Fe, Argentina, Victoria Noelia Bustos will face Kimberly Connor in a 10-rounder for the IBF 135-pound title. That might be a title that in the near future will be seeing Katie Taylor vying for, since it's in her division. On Thursday, March 23rd, like we mentioned earlier on the show, from the Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, Golden Boy Promotions on ESPN gives us their first and only female boxer, Marlene Esparza, former bronze medalist at the 2012 London Olympics. She's going to be doing her pro debut against Rachel Zasloff in a four-rounder at flyweight. On Friday, March 24th, from San Juan, Argentina, the IBF flyweight champion Leona Paola Yudica will be defending her title against Venezuelan Carolina Alvarez in a scheduled 10-rounder. While from Saturday, March 25th, in Campeche, Mexico, this is scheduled on BoxRec. We don't know how much truth there is, but Ana Julaton, a fighter out of the Philippines and Southern California, who at one time or another was being tutored as the female Manny Pacquiao, is coming back to boxing after foraying into MMA. She's going to be facing Maria Jose Nunez in an 8-rounder at featherweight. If it is true and she comes back and she looks good and she decides to stay, then there's some pretty interesting fights there for her at featherweight. Obviously, we have Cindy Serrano, the sister of Amanda Serrano, the WBO featherweight champion. We have the IBF featherweight champion Jennifer Han from El Paso, Texas. And we have the unified WBA and WBC Jelena Marjanovic from Canada also in that division. We also have the sister of Lucas Matisse, Soledad Matisse, who was formerly the WBA champion. So a couple other fighters there, a fight that was mentioned some years ago that could have been a bit of a blockbuster fight would have been against Jackie Nava. So who knows if Ana decides to stay at featherweight or go down to 122, but that could be a future fight as well against Jackie Nava. So let's see if this fight actually goes through fruition and we see the return to a boxing ring of Ana Julaton. The same night on March 25th from the Gimnasio Municipal José Neri Santos in the Ciudad de México, Promociones del Pueblo on Televisa would give us the sister of Mariana Juarez, Lourdes La Pequeña Lulu Juarez, going against Karina Fernandez in a 10-rounder at Super Flyweight. Lourdes has said through the press that winning this fight, she would aggressively and actively look to challenge the WBC Super Flyweight champion, La Loba Muñoz. So let's see what happens on March 25th when she faces Karina Fernandez and then ends up winning that title, she would go after the WBC Super Flyweight champion, Zulina La Loba Muñoz, who, according to Boxrec, is also scheduled to fight on the same night, March 25th, but in Cancun, Mexico, against the always feared Tiffany Beth Anderson, or better, the TBA, in a 10-rounder at Super Flyweight. It's not announced if it will be the defense of her title. On the same night, so we're going to have a bunch of fights on March 25th, but this time from Manchester Arena, we have the return of Katie Taylor, who just fought a couple weeks ago on the undercard of Tony Bellew against David Haye. She will be coming back on March 25th against Tiffany Beth Anderson, a TBA, in a 6-rounder at lightweight, and that's from the Manchester Arena in England on March 25th. And finally, from the UDC Physical Activity Center in the District of Columbia, D.C., Franchon Cruz, 0-1, the first opponent of Clarissa Shields back in November, is also coming back to the ring. She will be facing Latasha Burden in a 4-rounder at middleweight. And that is the end of our upcoming calendar, and that brings us to the end of the 23rd edition of the 2-Minute Round, your Hooks and Jabs look at the female fight world. Hopefully on our next show, which is scheduled for March 30th, we will definitely have back my co-host David Avila. Today, it is his birthday, so we want to wish him a very happy birthday. And also, the heart and soul of the 2-Minute Round, Elena Baby Doll Reed, should be back with us as well. So, on behalf of the Leave It in the Ring Network, our fearless leader, David Duenas, my co-host, David Avila, and Elena Baby Doll Reed, I am Felipe Leon, and we wish you a good night.